and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio station and show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 538. I'm Andrew Corse, one of your hosts, and I'm joined today by Skylar Vicroy, all the way from the States. Hi, Skylar.
Hey, Andrew, how are you doing?
Hey, good, thanks. Have been enjoying the racing that we had this weekend. Like I said, we had the BSB Championship round 11 from Assen, and we also had round 11 of World Superbike from Manicor. I got to see the World Superbike, so we'll chat about that a little bit later. And did you get to see the World Superbike?
I did get to see the World Superbike, and I was able to catch one of the races for the British Superbike, so I was actually able to see it this time, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, fantastic. Because I think, like I say, like, you know, race two was probably the better of the two races. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But first of all, we just want to talk and say thank you to all those people who have taken the time to donate. Harry has got the full list, which we'll be putting together to say shout outs to people.
So we have a big thank you, first of all, to Gary Shavitt, long-term friend of the show. AJ Pilbeam, back at it again with the donations. AJ Pilbeam has actually just renewed his subscription, so a big shout out to AJ. We also have a Blue Bearings once again right up in there. And then we also have John Michael Allen. And I think that's everybody that we've done since last time. Hopefully I didn't delete anybody's email by accident. Back to the hosts.
So thanks again for donating there. If you feel like you want to donate, do check out the motopodcast.com website. Have a look down the left-hand side. There is the donate button. You know, we say this time and time again, but it really is true. Every little really does help. So, you know, even just $2 or something, whatever you feel you can throw in the hat would be great. Great to see it. Okay, we're going to start this week with the news. There was some MotoGP news following on from Rossi's training accident. Now we have Jack Miller, who will be missing the upcoming Japanese MotoGP in Motegi after he too fractured his right tibia in a training accident. He was riding a trials bike, not an enduro bike, and he fractured the top of his tibia when he put his foot down to save a slow front-end crash. It's interesting that, you know, these aren't even sort of big, dramatic accidents. They're just sort of run-of-the-mill little accidents, but they just happen, you know, when you have these kind of training accidents.
Yeah, it's kind of like you take it with a grain of salt, right? It's a training accident, trials bike, and it was a slow corner and I put my foot down. And what's slow to these guys though, right? I mean, if you're used to going through a corner at 150 miles per hour, 45 miles per hour, yeah, it's a slow corner, but that's definitely enough speed to do some damage.
Yeah, for sure. And the funny thing too, I didn't realize this, but with Rossi's accident, he broke his fibia and his tibia.
Yes.
And apparently the breaking both bones actually helped him come back quicker. There was apparently less pain with one bone broken. The other one acts as a bit of a splint, or supposedly kind of keeping the gap there, which causes a lot of pain. So in some respects, Rossi was lucky. And in this case, it sounds like Jack, unfortunately, was unlucky to only break one bone, if that makes any kind of sense. Right now, I don't believe there's been any news to see if there's a replacement yet, named from Mark VDS for Motegi.
No, I don't think there has been. They're trying to figure out who they want to put there, if they're going to put someone on the bike. But with Jack not being healed up, they want to get him ready for Phillip Island for sure, since that's his home race. But in the meantime, they're going to have to call someone. You know, maybe a Honda test rider or somebody like that might step in for a little bit.
And I don't know. I think even him being fit for Phillip Island is going to be pretty optimistic. That would be impressive if he makes that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are hard as nails, though, so I wouldn't put it past Jack to get ready for his home GP.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. He's going to be pretty motivated. He's going to want to be there.
Right. So Terry McKenzie, he's not going to continue in Moto2 after the 2017 season. He's going to be searching for a ride in the British Superbike Championship for 2018. However, McKenzie does have an option to remain with his current squad, which is the Kiefer Racing squad that he currently runs with in Moto2 for 2018. But the title sponsor, Air Grinder, is going to be withdrawing the support for 2018, which is, unless they garner another title sponsor, that means McKenzie's going to have to come up with a whole lot more money to keep the seat. And according to him, he doesn't feel that it's worth it. He doesn't want people throwing that much money at him because... amazingly, I was reading an article just before we got on. They were talking about the cost of Moto2, and you know, I think I remember which team it was, but he was saying it's about $2.6 million per team to field two riders. And I was like, wow, okay, yeah, that's quite a bit of money for a season.
Yeah, I saw that too. I think it was on the Crash.net website, and that was fascinating. I think he was actually saying that, you know, for that kind of money, you can pretty much run a MotoGP team, partly because of the subsidy that you get from Dorna, where the Moto2 teams just aren't getting that kind of subsidy.
Exactly. And he was saying, of course, and I had a big experience when I was doing my funny car stuff, is that when it comes to finding sponsors, especially when it's such a niche sport, they don't go outside of the circle to look for sponsors. They end up stealing sponsors from one another. That happened a lot in a lot of the racing I was dealing with. So he made quite a good point to saying, okay, if it's $1 million to be a title sponsor, and now that $1 million can be accepted by a MotoGP team, what team are you going to throw your money at, the big show or the undercard? And, you know, they're afraid that they're going to lose a lot of sponsors to GP just because of the subsidies that GP is now getting.
Yeah, and I think for racers too as well, you know, Moto2 can be a great sort of grooming series for those people who can move it up into MotoGP. But also, you know, we've seen a lot of good riders go into Moto2 and just sort of disappear off the radar. You sometimes wonder if British Superbikes, with the run of form that British Superbikes is having, if that isn't a better place to be. But equally too, it's an incredibly competitive series as well. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands for 2018. Okay, moving on too, we had the news that Marcus Ruiterberg has been given a MotoGP test with the Red Bull KTM at Aragon. I think the MotoGP team stayed on for a few days at Aragon to do some additional testing. KTM was certainly one of the teams there. Marcus, it seems, is trying to figure out whether he's going to be where he's going to be for 2018. I don't think anything's confirmed for him as yet. Marcus Ruiterberg just wrapped up his third German IDM championship. Options for him, obviously, logically, would be British Superbikes or back to the World Superbike for next season. But, I mean, there's a few other riders now looking for rides in World Superbikes. Certain Loris Baz is one of them. He's been rumored to be heading to potentially the Honda team. There's also rumors, too, that Guintoli will be back in World Superbike next year. I think he's also been mentioned for some rides with the Petrucini Kawasaki for the last two rounds in Jerez and LaSalle as well. The problem with World Superbikes is just trying to find a competitive team. I think Loris Baz said, okay, I know I'm not going to get a competitive team, but, you know, he said, how about a project team? And I think Honda fit into that category as a project team.
Yeah, it's a tough call to go to World Superbike right now because, as you know, we've talked about on this show before, it's not necessarily that the bikes are, you know, that much better than one another. It's the support that Kawasaki and Ducati put behind their team efforts. And if you're not going to land on a team that has A, the funding and the manpower, it doesn't really matter how good that bike is supposed to be. You can't, you know, take on the big boys without the big bucks.
Yeah, it is. It's the teams that have the full factory support. Kawasaki and Ducati have that right now. You know, there might be a Honda team, but it's not a full factory Honda team. You know, and that goes the same with BMW. That goes the same with Yamaha as well. You know, until Superbikes is able to create a series that will pull these factories back in to support them in the same way, in the same level that Ducati and Kawasaki there, it's really hard to see these teams competing equally with those two top teams. In BSB news, Kawasaki, the JG Speedfit Kawasaki team, confirmed their rider lineup for 2018 will be Liam Haslam and Luke Mossy. Both of them have done really, really well this year. Luke, unfortunately, had the injury at Thruxton, I believe, with the broken back. And his, you know, the rest of his season really has been him just trying to get fit now and position himself for a run at the championship for 2018. Leon, I know, another one of these riders, I think he was looking to see what opportunities there were in World Superbike. Part of the reason, I think, for him coming back to British Superbikes was to try and put himself on that stage to show off what he could do to step back up into World Superbikes. But, you know, as we've just said, there just really isn't the rides available. So he's taken, I think, what's for him will probably be the better option and to stay with British Superbikes again for next year.
Speaking of confirmations of British Superbike riders next year, Christian Iden is going to be staying with the Tyco B&W team for 2018. He's a younger guy. I know he's been stepping up. I've been seeing his name drop several times, and he's been making his way toward the front of that series, so it's kind of good that he's staying with a top team that will allow him to compete in that series.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a few people raised a few eyebrows because I know sometimes I think Christian's been a little vocal, saying, you know, he's not necessarily totally happy with the support that he got from Taz Racing. Partly, I think, because Taz is also doing the road races too, and this has sort of split their focus a little bit, where he, I think, obviously has wanted the team to focus more on the British Superbikes with additional testing. I think they've had to run the roads and the BS the Superbike team hand in hand. And I think they've been able to hammer out an agreement where, you know, he's happy that he feels that he's going to get the focus that he needs to be just that little bit more competitive, because, you know, British Superbikes, you know, these days, you just, it's really, really tough. And I think you know, he's definitely got the talent, and I think the team have the skills, so that could be a real winning combination for next year.
All right, so moving into World Superbike news, Ducati Superbike boss Ernesto Marinelli will leave Ducati at the end of 2017. There's no word on what he plans to do next. That's going to be some big, big shoes to fill. He has been with them for quite some time. He's worked with riders such as Kaczynski and Bayless, going through the AMA program all the way up to the World Superbike program, to being like the director, the manager, to basically running the team. So, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to stay in the paddock or be doing things or go on to GP, but someone who's going to have to step up, and at least they get the same bike for next year, and he didn't leave when they were, you know, introducing a brand new bike. So it's kind of a, you get that grace period of 1 year for him to move on and someone to step up. But regardless, whoever fills that position has got a lot of work in front of them.
Well, for sure. I heard some rumors that, well, you know, again, rumors that he may be going to Honda. I don't know if this will be helping Honda with their World Superbike effort to help improve their team, but you're right. Ducati going to have some fun times ahead of them. They've got the V4 engine has come out, the road bike too. We've seen some spy shots for that. So, I mean, that is the roadmap, the future for Ducati over the next couple of years. We'll be introducing that V4 and then getting that competitive to compete at a similar level as the twin has these last couple of years.
Yeah, the development cycle, I think when the Panigale first came out, I mean, they were throwing parts at left and right. That's what we see, the different, you know, exhaust on it now, which causes some controversy because there's the whole silhouette rule, right? But, you know, with the V4, what will be interesting is now it's the first time in a long time that Ducati is actually going to be on the same CC requirements as everybody else. So we'll see if they can, you know, bring it. But considering the power they can make with the V4 in GP, I'm not really worried about the V4 being underpowered for World Superbike.
No, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think Ducati have always had the engineering. They just seem to have that sort of Italian air organization issues, where focusing around the riders and what the riders need. And they seem to have really turned that around, sort of that out, both at the MotoGP team and certainly the World Superbike team as well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It could be a real force to be reckoned with and really sort of bring the fight to Kawasaki in the next couple of years. Okay, we had Stefan Bradl, the Honda rider, unfortunately ruled out of the remaining two rounds of the Superbike Championship due to a wrist injury that he sustained at a crash in Portimao. 10K Honda, which were, they have had a very hard and pretty depressing season, I think, haven't currently announced a rider lineup for those last two rounds yet. We've definitely seen names of Giuliano, Gagne, and Takahashi linked, but I think right now they're still struggling to see who will take those final few places for the last two rounds.
Yeah, it's, you know, each one of those names is a good reason to have. I'm pretty sure Giuliano will just stay with the team. It's pretty much between, I think, Gagne and Takahashi, because, you know, whether it's commitments, I think Takahashi still has, you know, his races to finish the Japanese championship. So, you know, Gagne may step in again. He's been kind of a good choice to, you know, get some exposure. It's good for the team, but tough year for the Red Bull team. Definitely a tough year. You know, at the beginning of this year, it's quite the opposite, right? A lot of promise, you know, a bit of an update on the bike. Nicky Hayden's there. Red Bull's coming in. Stefan Bradl, you know, two GP guys and all this talk. And then you get to the end of this year, and, oh, man, it's just a hard times for that team. And I hope next year they get that luck to swing back the other way.
Yeah, for sure. I think part of what put them on the back foot, from what I understand, was getting the bike very late at the beginning of the season. So, yes, you know, for them to sort of get testing with that bike and get developing, they were definitely on their back foot. And then I think, too, they're just, you know, they're not necessarily getting the factory support that they need. It was interesting hearing Stefan Bradl's comments, I think, when he went to race in the Suzuka 8-hour and he jumped on, you know, what was the full fat factory developed Honda there, because obviously, you know, Suzuka for them is an important race. It was interesting him coming back talking about, and I think he brought back a lot of information and knowledge that really helped instantly take that Honda up a step. So hopefully now with a little bit more time with the bike, and you know, if they can have a bit more time with the factory to develop that as well, maybe they can start the next season a little bit stronger.
So here's something I'm excited about. World Slipbike is possibly going to be headed to Northern Ireland, where they're building a circuit now in the county Tyrone. The deal will be to host the track as early as 2019. It is in the works. I did take a bit of the drawing out for the track. It looks fantastic, and obviously we've seen quite a few riders come from Ireland. You know, they do race a lot of the real roads up there, and it's pretty gnarly. So for them to have a track, I wouldn't be surprised within 10 years they start knocking out some GP guys. That's for sure.
So this is, I have to say, this is kind of news for me. And obviously, as someone who's just going to come off the back of following the whole Circuit of Wales adventure, you know, this is genuine. This is certain. This is going to be built.
Yeah, from what I was taking it, they've already got private funding, so they're not relying on the government to build any of this like Wales was. And they've already gotten permission to build it, and apparently they've already got the funding. And I'm not sure if they've broken ground on it, but they've already got the area, and they're redeveloping an area that was an old clay mining area, so it's being unused as it is right now. So it's kind of a win-win for everyone there, I do believe. So I think this has much higher potential of getting done than the Circuit of Wales did. But like you said, until we see the asphalt poured and the bikes turning on the track, it's still kind of a we'll wait and see.
Well, yeah, it's good news. I mean, I'm always happy to see new circuits, especially in the UK, Northern Ireland, Ireland as well. So, yeah, fingers crossed this comes off, because, you know, I think a lot of people were really hopeful the Circuit of Wales would have come off. But, you know, for whatever reason, that's done, that's dusted, it's behind us. Let's move on. Okay, so if there's no other news, shall we move on and talk about the British Superbike race that we had from Arsene?
Yes, so like we were saying earlier, I didn't get a chance to catch this race, so you're going to have to not only let the people know how the race went, but you're going to have to let me know as we go as well.
Okay, well, I'll do my best. I think, you know, we need to sort of bear in mind here that this is the penultimate round before the final round. I think really with the showdown system, we know right now that this is really the race between Lian Haslam, Josh Brooks, Shane Byrne. I think we know that Dixon Hickman and Haller and the other front runners, unfortunately, are probably out of it now. So it's the top three. These are the guys who are watching to see. And, you know, I love the fact the British Superbike took the initiative and, you know, held around Assen. It's a fantastic track. I think it really suits these bikes. And it's great to see, you know, the Superbikes running there. We always have great racing. Unfortunately, though, going to Assen towards the end of September, you know, northern the Netherlands, the weather's always going to be a bit poor. And it was, unfortunately, for qualifying. Qualifying on the Saturday was absolutely soaking wet. Standing water and big puddles. So these are brave guys venturing out there with no traction control, even with the full wets, 230 horsepower superbike monsters. Brave guys. The Q1, we saw some early casualties, unfortunately, with the weather. We had Hickman out for fairly early. Luke Mossy was down as well. Unfortunately, he looked hurt, although I think he was able to get up. He wasn't able to post a lap, so he was one of the early fallers who suffered there. Bridewell also went down, and we also had Richard Cooper as well, just falling at the end of the session. So unfortunately, some of the names who went out in qualifying one were Hickman and Bridewell, Glenn Irwin on the Ducati, Taylor McKenzie, unfortunately, still his luck not doing well after his riding with a broken foot from the previous crash. And then we also had, like I say, Luke Mossy down. So in Q2, and this is what always kills me, you know, these guys go out, they do this huge qualifying session, and then, you know, they have to sort of go out and do it all over again, especially in weather like this. One of the early fallers, unfortunately, was Shane Byrne. He was down early, pretty fast crash, and you could see the cameras panned to him. He was pretty stunned, but back up and trying to recover the bike. It was interesting, and one thing I didn't realize, that they not only are they allowed to recover the bike, but they do have to go back to the pits to get the bike checked out before they're allowed back on track. And this, you'll see why this is important a little bit later. Shane, I think, was able to recover the bike with only about 5 minutes remaining. And at that point, he was in 10th place, trying to get back to the pits to see if he could get the bike sorted out. He was able to get back out with only about 2 minutes remaining, but incredibly, he went down again. He was on an outlap. He looked like he'd gone wide to let some of the faster riders through and was clearly going slow on a pretty on the outside of the track. And somehow, with cold tires, the you know, he just got back on the gas pretty gently and the bike just snapped and that was it. He was down again, so he was out. So that ended up him leaving him starting 16th on the grid. The Q3 then, the last remainers, it came down to a fight between Allison, Haslam, Iden, Linfoot and Ray, Hopkins, Elliott and Guintoli. Laverty went down early in Q3, but he was able to rejoin. But unfortunately, he didn't recover to the pits, just kept riding during the laps, and he ended up having all his lap times cancelled for that session. Which is why he ended up back in ninth on the grid. We also had Josh Elliott was running a really, really strong fifth, but unfortunately went down with only 1 minute remaining. And you could see he was furious with himself, but that's still an impressive effort, I think. You know, him running up there in fifth in those kind of conditions, that's really impressive. The other thing that I thought was really impressive is, again, and this shows the strength of British Superbikes, we had six manufacturers on the front of the grid. And I don't know about you, Skylar, but I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I just got to show you that the rules are definitely, you know, balanced out for each manufacturer, and that, you know, it's always good to have that kind of competition so you're not getting bored with just seeing the same three bikes, World Superbike, do all the winning. So it's definitely good that they're having that kind of parity between all the manufacturers.
Yeah, so we had James Ellison in first on the Yamaha. We had Leon Haslam in second on the Kawasaki. Christian Iden in third on the BMW. Dan Linfoot, another strong showing on the Honda. Bradley Ray, who's really coming to the fore now with the Suzuki, in fifth. John Hopkins, obviously with his knowledge and experience, showing there with the Ducati in sixth. Josh Eller, I said, like I say, on the BMW, and Guintoli on the other Suzuki in eighth place. So it was a pretty good grid. So race one was on the Sunday, and luckily by Sunday the blue skies had come, the track had dried, and so now we were in for some real racing, some real nice dry track racing, which is really what we wanted to see. Taylor McKenzie unfortunately wasn't able to make the grid. He may be back for the last round at Brands. But you could tell now this was a time for Haslam, you know, starting second on the grid. He's got his main competition back in 16th. You know, we've got Brooks down in 11th. So these guys are really going to have to push hard at the beginning of the race to try and make up as many places as they can. So, you know, Haslam's looking pretty good here for some decent points without having to work too hard. The start was good, although Josh Elliott unfortunately went wide early on, which was a shame after all the work he put in for that high grid position as well. Early on too, we saw Guintoli moving up, and this just confirms what the flashes that we've seen of the Suzuki. They've moved back, from what I understand, to the factory swing arm, something they had played with early in the year. They've gone back to standard, and then they've come back again to the factory swing arm, and this now, they seem to have got a setup that's really working for him, because Guintoli was really able to attack, and like I say, in those early laps, getting up to third. It was just great to see the Suzuki that's had so much promise just being up there, because they've done well in, I think, in Moto America this year. Is that right?
Yeah, they won the championship this year.
Well, there you go. Can't get better than that, hey? Yeah, so I think, you know, the main focus here was watching Byrne and Brooks and Hickman to a degree pushing up through the pack, you know, seeing if they could close down Haslam early on in the race and not lose too much ground out. But it was really Ellison that took the lead early on in race one. By lap five, he'd already established a bit of a gap in the lead with Haslam and Guintoli in second and third, Linfoot, Ray, Iden. Byrne, by this point, he's up to about seventh, Hopkins and Hickman. Brooks, unfortunately, seemed to have got stuck in about 10th and just wasn't moving forwards anymore. By lap seven now, Byrne is up to fourth and Brooks too is pushing through into seventh. So they're starting to close down, but the worry is, you know, have they burnt up their tires and, you know, having to push through, putting on those aggressive moves to come through. By lap nine, you've still got Guintoli looking pretty racy as he slips past Haslam now in lap nine. And he's starting to close down the gap. So now you've got Guintoli in second. And this is something I don't think we would have imagined even just one or two rounds ago. But Ellison's leading with Guintoli in second, Haslam in third. And by now, Byrne is right up behind him with a bit of a gap behind, followed by Ray and Brooks. Now, this is where the fun really starts, around about lap 10, because now you've got Guintoli. Obviously, he's feeling pretty confident. Now he's starting to feel pretty racy, as you get the sense that you know, he's got an opportunity to maybe even get a win. So now he's starting to fight with Ellison. And I think this helps, because this starts to help slow Ellison down and bring Byrne and Haslam into it, as Byrne goes past Haslam into third. And again, we've just got some really, really great close racing at the front here, which is just so much fun to see. And again, four different bikes. We've got Suzuki and Kawasaki, Ducati, Yamaha is up there. So we've got Guintoli now leading with Haslam and Byrne and Ellison. Unfortunately, one of the crashes we see lap 13 is Iden. He goes down pretty hard from 12th place at the entrance to the Timmins chicane. And by lap 14 now, Haslam has taken the lead while Ellison has come back into it and slipping up into second. So we've got Haslam in first, Ellison in second. And Haslam now, you get the sense that, you know, this is his time to push. He's been sat there just sort of marking his time, keeping his tires. And now he really, really starts to push, because literally within half to one lap, he's got a gap over Ellison. So you can imagine by this point, you've got Byrne and Brooks in fourth and fifth, and you can just see with Haslam leading, they're just in their minds, they're doing that mental math of what the points gap is going to be. You know, 25 points for a win, or I think it's 20 for a second, 16 for a third. So they can start to see, you know, their championship is slipping away here. So they really, really need to push. By lap 16 now, Guintoli had that early pace, but his tires now just seem to have gone slightly, because Ellison and Byrne are able to get past, and now Brooks has caught up and is hassling Guintoli. And on the final lap, which is pretty action-packed, you get Byrne now pushing past Allen to get into second, and Ray, who's frustrating Brooks. Brooks is able to just get back past him by the finish line. So by the finishing line, we have Haslam takes the win, Byrne in second, Ellison in third, Guintoli in a really, really strong fourth. Brooks, you know, unfortunately, a good fourth considering where he started on the grid. But, you know, I think he would probably recognize too that wasn't really quite enough to keep his championship hopes alive. And a really, really strong ride by Bradley Ray in fifth. So the standings then at that point had Haslam on 596, with Byrne then trailing by 28 points with 568. Brooks in third with 560, that's 36 points behind. So, you know, you start to think, you know, obviously Haslam's shown some good form for the weekend, so it's going to be hard work for these two guys now as they go into the second race. And you say you're able to catch some or most of the second race, is that right, Skyler?
I was able to catch the whole thing, actually, which was nice to see.
Okay, so we had Shaky Byrne posted the fastest lap, so he was on pole for the grid, with Guintoli in second, Haslam in third. We had Brooks and Ellison and Iden on the second row, with Bradley Ray, Linfoot and Dixon, and then Hickman, Hopkins and O'Halloran just bringing up the last 8th, 9th and 10th positions. So again, I thought it was like a really, really good race. It was one of those that struck me where everyone kind of settles in early on. You know, with the kind of those three main groups, you had Byrne and Ellison leading, and then you had Guintoli, Haslam and Brooks, kind of the second group. And then I think the third group was like the Hickman, Dixon, Linford group. Did you see that?
Yeah, so you're kind of like your top five guys that seem to be the fastest ones kind of started to get out there. And it was interesting to see early on in the race when Shane Byrne got out there to the lead, then Haslam was pulling behind him. Like, this is 1 and 2 in the championship, and they're 1 and 2 on the track. Like, okay, we're going to have a good duel. But then Haslam kind of started losing ground. Ellison got by him. And then Ellison kind of takes off with Shaky, and you're kind of seeing them drop back. Now it's two groups. You got those two up front. Then you have Guentoli, Haslam, and Brooks were together. And Guentoli was just waiting. He was biding his time. And then, him and Haslam just started, swapping places. And the gap grew a little more and grew more until, Guentoli finally did manage to get by him. And then once he gets by him, he starts to pull a small gap until, Haslam and Brooks duke it out a little bit. Then Guentoli kind of has a little bit of clean air to run around. And he's actually able to pull the gap down, which I didn't think he was going to be able to do. I thought Shaky and Ellison were staying together so they could increase their gap. But Guentoli, man, there was a couple corners he was getting that bike to, I think it was turn one. He could really pick it up and put the power down. He was gaining, a couple tenths just coming out of turn one alone.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was pretty impressive just to see him get his head down and just chase after them. I mean, he could see them, and he was after them. And it's not as if Byrne and Ellison were fighting. I think, they knew that they had the pack following, and I think they were just trying to run their rhythm and just try and keep these guys behind them.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised Guentoli was even able to catch him, because then when he did, then I was concerned that he burned up his tires trying to get there and that. But then Ellison got by Byrne, and then next thing you know, Haslam and Brooks have caught back up, and we've got this five rider train going again. And it was they put on a show there for a good handful of laps with everyone being so tight and close together.
It was like, it was pretty static, I think, up until about sort of lap 15. And then it's like lap 16, someone waved a flag or something, because the gloves were off. Do you remember? They started lap 16 and they came into like the first corner, literally four abreast.
Yes.
I think just, and it was all just chicken on the brakes. And we saw, I think, Byrne went wide at that corner. I think, Ellison was coming up on the inside, getting past on Guentoli, but then Guentoli's got a different line and he's back on Ellison. I mean, Guentoli, you could see it by that point, I think, was really, really smelling the win. And, he was just like, any sense of self-preservation was out the window. He wanted that win, and he was just, he was after it.
Yeah, because then Haslam blew the corner at the same time as Byrne did. They went back, then, Byrne went from leading it into the corner to being in fifth, coming out of the corner, sitting behind Haslam. And then once Guentoli got out front with Ellison, they just kind of disappeared. And then I think Brooks and Ellison started duking it out, and that's when Guentoli, I think, he got about a second ahead of them, and that was lights out after that.
Yeah, he was able to just kind of, like you say, just get that second, and I don't think they were going to pull that back. And it was impressive, I think, too, that he obviously still had the tires left even after the pace he'd shown during the race, that he still had the tires for that final lap.
Yeah, so he brings it home. It's the first win, I think, for the Suzuki and for Bennett's. And you could definitely tell that team, when they were on the wall, the amount of yelling they were doing, that was a bit of weight off the shoulders for sure.
Yeah. So I saw Guentoli take first, Brooks in second. I think Haslam was third, Ellison there. And unfortunately, Shane Shakyburn back in fifth. So that really did his championship run, unfortunately, no favors. Guentoli, if I remember, I saw the headline, that made him the 10th different winner, I think, for this season.
Wow, that's impressive.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah,
I had
and then
no
like
idea.
You said, and plus they have a whole new manufacturer, Suzuki, as well. Wow. But I think, obviously, I mean, it's clear Haslam definitely had the best weekend overall. I mean, he's going into brands now. The last three races here, I mean, he's definitely in a very, very strong position now. I think his total now is, 612? So he's 32 points ahead of Joss Brooks, and he's 33 points ahead of Shane Byrne as well. It's hard to see. I think he's definitely got one hand on the trophy there, don't you think?
Yeah, it's kind of, he needs to go into management mode now. Now it's not so much about wins, it's just keeping those in the championship close by. He just has to kind of finish near them pretty much at this point to bring it home, because, I mean, he can't afford to go out there and wreck it, because we are headed into the triple header. So you can, that gap is not insurmountable for Josh Brooks or Shane Byrne to jump up there. But Haslam definitely can kind of take it a little easier and sit back and watch those guys duke it out and just sit right back there and collect the points and bring the championship home.
Yeah, for sure. Which is impressive too, because I mean, you know, for Haslam, for example, I mean, there were three races at Silverstone that he didn't even put any points on the board.
Oof.
You know, I mean, okay, you know, I know Shane Byrne also too had two races early on in the season, I think at Donington, where he, same again, you know, like I think he was out with injury, so, you know, he didn't post any points. The other thing too, I just want to recap too, is, you know, you have the showdown, but you also have the Riders' Cup as well, the thank you for taking part cup. So anyway, so, you know, I should also say too that unfortunately Christian Eden, you know, he had his crash, but he is still heading up at the end of Assen, heading into Brands. He's still heading up the Riders' Cup, 187 points. James Ellison in second, 185. Ellison actually had a pretty strong Assen as well, don't you think? He was running pretty competitively in both those races.
Yeah, so that's something I wanted to actually ask you a question about, since you're better knowledge on BSV. Every time it seems like I, when I do get a chance to catch BSV, Ellison is one of those guys that can get out and lead races, but he hardly wins many races. Is he hard on tires?
You know, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what it is. He's definitely had a few seasons of just not being able to put a consistent season together. I don't know if it's just he has favored tracks. I mean, he's certainly sometimes, I think most people you talk to him, you know, the whole expression that if he fell into a barrel of tits, you know, he'd come up sucking his thumb. He really has had some abysmal luck. And this season, in some respects, is part of that as well. I mean, he... I don't think he had any points at Brands Hatch, Indy, and there were other opportunities as well. I think Snetterton, you know, so there were, you know, points finishes that he really should have had. And then equally too, there are some finishes which were just low down. So, you know, I think the Yamaha, Josh Brooks has been able to do something, you know, good with that. I tend to think too that, you know, the World Superbikes leads the development of these bikes. Most of the British Superbike teams, I think, have strong liaisons with factories who do development work. So, you know, Kawasaki and Ducati obviously are the stronger bikes. Yamaha, you know, not so much. Same with Honda as well. So it's tough for the smaller independent teams, I think, to, you know, develop these bikes completely on their own without the support of a big World Superbike team too. So it is, he's just one of those always kind of, they're nearly men, you know. Equally, next year he could win. You know, he could be in the top three. So it's hard to say. I think definitely we need to get I think Dave Neal on the show, maybe sort of as an after season special or something. He would know.
Yeah, that's probably not bad. Yeah, I know he still sends us emails from time to time with his insider information. It's still quite impressive all the info he can download into the email for us to look through. And I often sit there and wonder, like, I wonder how much of this we can actually say on the show.
I know. He's a great source, but I don't know what, like I said, I know what it takes. Chocolate, cheese, beer, money, probably, to tempt him out for a chin wag or something like that. We'll have to see if we can't get him together after the season and get his take on it and his scoop, and then also maybe some of his thoughts as well for next year. I think that would be great.
Yeah, maybe get him on for kind of one of those season wrap up for BSB shows when all is said and done here in a few weeks.
Yeah, that would be great. So BSB then has, unfortunately, one round left, three races at Brands Hatch. That is 13th to the 15th of October. So another week or so away, and then we'll know. It's a shame too, because it's been some of the best racing, I think, this year. I mean, MotoGP has been good, but British Superbikes has been really exceptional, I think, this year.
Yeah, it's just, it's that time of the year where it's like, okay, well, you know, now we've seen that, you know, champions are being crowned and seasons are coming to a close. You know, Moto America's over, BSB's got a round left, World Superbike's got two, GP's got four. It's like, okay, it's getting to be like, oh man, silly season's kind of wrapped up. We kind of know what everything's going for next year. So now it's getting to that, like, oh man, is it that late in the year already? The next thing you know, it's going to be Christmas, and then we're back to testing, and we're back, you know, stuck back in the vein once again.
And I think the last wrap-up, I think, will be the British Superbike there, silly season two. I think we've already got some of the big-name riders confirmed, but I don't think we'll see a lot of the other places slot into place until well after the season's done So it's going to be interesting too, especially like, you know, as we were talking about before, that, you know, there isn't necessarily desirable seats to step up to in World Superbike. So I think British Superbike is still very much on people's minds as a place to come and show your stuff.
Yeah, I think it's actually better to, if you're going to be mid-packing back in World Superbike, it's, you know, for your career, it's better to go to British Superbike, run up towards the front, and then the following year make another, you know, chance at getting a World Superbike ride, because you can do the wild card thing too and get in there and really show your stuff with, I believe, British Superbike and even Moto America to a lesser extent, almost run in line with the rules of World Superbike, just so that, you know, can happen. BSB definitely a much closer match because of the same tires, whereas here in Moto America they run Dunlop. But I think here in Moto America we're actually going to be changing the rules again to try to, there's something with the electronics. I think in World Superbike they definitely have the most expensive electronics, and then, like you said, BSB they don't really have any, and then Moto America I think they still have some magnetic Morellis and things like that. So they're going to be changing that up next year. I can get more in depth with that at some other time. But yeah, definitely running in BSB is shown. It's almost like the, oh, I wouldn't want to call it a junior World Superbike, because at times I think the racing is actually better and more competitive. I mean, outside of course, your riders like Johnny Ray and Chaz Davies, those guys come to BSB and it's a whole nother ball game. And we've seen that, right? Because Leon Haslam comes back instantly competitive, whereas in BSB he was competitive, but he wasn't like he is now. So obviously there's still that step up, but very, very close racing and good racing, and you're gonna get, you know, a lot of fans, and plus you don't have to drive all over the world to race in that series.
And it was impressive to see too. I mean, Assen, you know, a lot of people having to travel for that, but you know, from the back shots I still saw a lot of stands were full, you know. Well, you know, they were, well, it was definitely well attended. I'd like to contrast that with the World Superbike from Manicor.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder what the, how is it, how easy is it to get from Great Britain over to Assen? Is it a train ride? Is it a, would you do plane?
It's a long swim. no, there are, I mean, obviously there's the channel tunnel, so you can you know, hop on a train or drive your car onto the train and take the channel. I think it's, you know, it's about an hour. You've got ferry, so it's fairly reasonable too. And of course, I mean, it's the Dutch. I mean, I think that, you know, the Dutch don't need much encouragement to come out and watch a motorcycle race at Assen as well. So I'm sure a lot of them follow the British Superbike series as well. But I do know a lot of people do make the pilgrimage over, because, I mean, it's a great track. I mean, it's something special. I do think you do get to see some pretty impressive racing. And we weren't disappointed this time either.
No, that's just it. Assen provides, you know, great racing. Pretty much, I think, whatever race is there, the track is built for passing. It's built for high speed with the corners and this action. And you've got great viewing because there's not an undulation in the track. So you get to see, you know, a lot of it. It's one of the tracks that I definitely want to make my way over to one of these days when I get into my world travel mode.
Yeah, there's a few different tracks I think you need to come see. Assen's probably one of them. You know, I think obviously some of the more scenic ones, things like Bruno, Mugello, and in Spain, places like Aragon and Jerez as well. You know, these are pretty pretty impressive tracks to see and experience.
Yeah, we'll be in Europe next year, so I'm trying to time my honeymoon right when there's a race around one of the tracks, so I can just take a day over and, you know, check out a race real quick. It's already there. We'll see how that goes. Explaining that one to the future wife, but yeah.
Wedding, honeymoon, divorce. Okay.
Ah, well, so you got a good run.
Outstanding. So I guess the next race you'll be reviewing will be the World Superbike race in Manicor.
That's right. I'm going to be jumping on with Derek a little later on. We're going to chat it up, and we should probably, you know, we'll do a good chat there, and then we'll put the show all together at the end, and then we'll probably have a nice solid hour and a half show when it's all said and done.
Outstanding. Okay, well, I will love you, and I will leave you and say thank you.
Alrighty, well, until next time, thank you for taking the time to jump, and you guys will all hear me in about a quick second with the magic of editing. See you later.
Thanks, Skylar. Bye.
And welcome back. So, of course, I'm still here, but now I'm joined by our very own Derek Cabrera. Derek, how's it going, man?
Hey, pretty good.
So
happy
we're gonna
to be back.
Oh, good to have you back. So we're going to cover the World Superbike round from Magny-Cours, which was an eventful one where one champion was crowned and another championship leader actually couldn't even start his race. So quite a bit of news happening out of this weekend in France.
Yeah, for sure. And we saw some classic tricky conditions that that Magny-Cours typically offers as well. So, we can jump right in with race one, if you will.
Actually, I want to do a couple of notes from qualifying real quick. So qualifying was the beginning of, this was probably the worst weather of the weekend. It was dumping rain and it was pretty sketchy. There was a lot of standing water on track and a lot of riders driving very slow crashes. I don't remember how many, in my notes, I threw those away. I think I ended up squashing a bug in the house that was on my fiance at the time. So I had those notes. I gave him a toss. But from one of the most important things was Johnny Ray actually went out in Super Pole 2, crashed early. Just a real simple low side, I think it's in turn 15 or where the slow hairpin is. Went in the pits, checked his bike over, went back out, but only had time to do about three laps. And not only did he go back out and grab pole, but I think he grabbed pole by almost a second and a half over everybody else in the rain. So for someone with a huge championship lead, he definitely was not concerned with protecting that, and his confidence has been at an all-time high leading into round one of this weekend.
Yeah, I remember watching that, and yeah, it wasn't in his out lap, it was his first flying lap he crashed, I think, and... Yeah, it's like you start to think, oh boy, he's not going to have enough time to get back in. But the Kawasaki Racing Team, they fix the bike. Everyone is super calm. Then you see Johnny go out and was like three laps he got in, all just super fast laps right off the bat. So it was incredibly impressive, but, you can't be surprised by Johnny Ray anymore. We're expecting this from him already. So, yeah.
Especially with how this weekend ends. We're going to be expecting this, I think, for a couple of years to come. Yeah. All right, so race one, a little better conditions on the Saturday from the Super Bowl conditions. The track was starting to dry out. Now, it wasn't dry enough to actually get a dry line. Even some riders thought that this might be a flag-to-flag race, but as we see, it would not turn out to be that way. But in the beginning, Ray gets the whole shot. And you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, he's got the whole shot. If he gets out in the lead, if he wins this race, the championship is over. I mean, it's locked up. No one can score any more points. He's got it in a wrap. And early on, you're thinking, okay, maybe he should just protect his lead. He pulls out 2 seconds right in the beginning. You're thinking, like, okay, dude, just slow it down. Take it easy. Wrap it up. Nope. Doesn't care. He figures, you know what? Davies is way back there. Sykes is still riding injured. If I get out here, I'm definitely want to get this win. I want to wrap this thing up and be done and dusted. So he pulls out. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't messing around. Like you said, two seconds in the opening lap. We saw Chaz get off to a really good start, too. He was down in seventh, went up to second by, like, the second corner. But even by then, Ray was already gone, so.
Yeah, and then, Vandermark, very early on, he loses the rear coming out of the real slow hairpin, which just goes to show you the track was still very, very tricky conditions. He goes down. But when he goes down, his bike was kind of spinning in the track. And unfortunately, Xavi Fares, as he was going by, the bike clipped the back, or his rear tire clipped the back of Vandermark's bike and sent the bike shattering into a bunch of pieces in the back, and Xavi Fares went down tumbling through the weeds. But Vandermark was able to remount and get back going again and would try to make his way through the field to get some decent points through the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, when you saw that bike, I think the light was hanging off. It was not looking pretty, but Vandermark got back on it, and we saw him fight through the field for the entire race and end up in a pretty decent position. But, we continued to see that. We saw Camier and Melandri start to make their way through the pack, too. And then around lap 4 or 5, we start to see Chaz drop down a little bit. It seems like he didn't have the tires working well for him. I don't know if he was in a wrong setting. They were also talking that he was on the development tire as opposed to the regular rain tire that Pirelli had. So it seems like a lot of guys were struggling on that. But
yeah, I think Laverty also was on the development tire too. And I think he was doing the same thing where he was real strong for about the first 5 laps. And then he started sliding back as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So soon after, Fores did eventually have to retire with about 3 to 4 laps to go. And then, our usual wet guy, we were kind of expecting, like, where's Anthony West? Where's he going to come? And then we did see him on the screen eventually. Unfortunately, he was getting lapped, which is a bit of a surprise to see Anthony West in the wet being lapped. I did not expect to see that this weekend.
I did not expect to see that either. And it was funny, worldsuperbike.com, they had an interview with West at the beginning of the weekend, and he was like, no, I don't like riding in the wet. And, you know, I'm sitting there watching it being like, oh, come on, stop it. You are the rain master. And then we see him down in 20th place, and it's like, what is going on? But, yeah, we saw him getting lapped by Ray, just cruising right by, and, yeah, it was not where we would expect to see Ant West.
No, but, you know, Ray, like you said, he was out front, way out front at this point. He was pulling away. He was about something like 20 seconds ahead. But just behind him, Ray had Melandri had just caught the Sykes, and they were putting on quite the battle, even so much as going. So when one of the turns there, Melandri was trying to swoop underneath, and Tom had a very wide swooping line. He comes over, Melandri gets a little wide, and he actually clips the back of Tom's bike, and you see sparks actually fly. And I thought Melandri was going down for sure, but he was actually able to catch that bike, which was impressive.
Yeah, it was. When you saw that contact, super fast turn three, front wheel to back wheel. Front wheel typically doesn't win, but yeah, Melandri got really lucky there. We saw him catching Sykes for a number of laps there, taking seconds out per lap. So, you know, obviously catching up can be a little easier than actually passing, as we saw with this battle. But eventually Melandri did get back in front.
Yeah, it's extremely hard, one, to pass Tom Sykes because he's such a demon. He's a super late breaker. He's very much park it in the corner and take it out. But the other thing is, too, when the track is wet and you kind of have that dry in line, when you get off that line, it's just that much harder to find grip. It's kind of a sketchy way to pass him unless you're like 100% sure you can get by him into the corner. The risk most times isn't worth the reward.
Yeah, for sure. And That's a great point. That's something I didn't even think of. I guess I was mainly thinking of like the Ducati line versus the Kawasaki line as well. So yeah, it's just another issue the riders had to deal with during the race.
Yep. And so all said and good, Melandri does eventually get around Tom Sykes and towards the end, but it was a good battle. But we're here really just to talk about Johnny Ray crossing the line in first place, wrapping up his third championship. But more impressively, his third championship in a row, and I think he's just about got all of them since he's been on the Kawasaki. It's been quite impressive.
Yeah, he's gone on a tear for the last 3 years. You know, one making that step from Honda to Kawasaki, the best team in the World Superbike paddock. He hasn't let that opportunity go away from him. So he's definitely capitalizing on it. He's at the top of his game. So much confidence. Yeah, we saw Ray crown champion there. He had a nice little celebration for the crowd and a very beautiful livery that they got put on his bike, if I do say so myself.
No, it was very nice. The helmet was very nice. The gold livery on the front of the Kawasaki that they actually, when he parked his bike on the track side during the cooldown lap, they put it on then and there. That's pretty impressive. I like that his symbol for three in a row was the trident. That was pretty cool too.
Yeah, that was a unique little way to do it, but just to see that, you know, Ray was not messing around, and comes out with the win. The first race that he won his championship on, that he won, so that was nice to see. It was also his 50th World Superbike win as well, so really impressive stuff from Johnny.
Yeah, he's just starting to rewrite his own record books at this point. So we have our podium done and dusted with Ray, Melandri, Sykes, but then coming in fourth was Leon Camier on the Envy Agusta. You know, this guy, you're thinking to yourself, so close to making that debut podium with the Envy Agusta. You know, he's just right there, and, you know, he's had a lot of technical issues this year, but I would love to see Camier possibly, you know, I love the Envy and how it looks, but I would really like to see Camier on a better bike next year.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Envy Agusta, the team, the brand, has a huge history. It's a gorgeous motorcycle, gorgeous livery. But yeah, we can see Leon is outriding that bike. He has so much talent and he has so much confidence right now. And just to see all, you know, the bike isn't at the level that the rider is. And it's one of the absolute clearest spots on the grid that we're seeing that. So yeah, it'd be nice to see, you know, if he makes it over to the Honda. There's been some talks there. I think there's been a lot of talks with Baz going to Pedicini possibly. So we'll see.
Yep. So we had Lowe's behind him in fifth, followed by Eugene Laverty. We had Ricardo in seventh, Davide Giuliano in eighth. But most impressively for the weekend is in ninth place, Vandermark. He made it back all through the field to grab ninth, and he wasn't even that far off of Davide. He was only about 4 seconds back, but considering how he was dead last after the second lap, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, to see Vandermark come back like that, like I was saying, the bike was absolutely mangled at first. So for him to get back on, put his head down, get into the top 10, and be able to start race two in a decent spot with the grid reshuffle, was really important to see.
And then in 10th place, the rider who did not have a great race would be Chaz Davies, struggling to get grip. And honestly, I'm pretty sure Chaz was just glad to see the checker flag, because towards the end, he was falling like a stone.
Yeah, even in lap 4 and 5, we saw him start to fall back. So the fact that he finished even in the top 10, honestly, was actually pretty impressive. And complete contrast, we saw Melandri, on the podium. But Davies, he was ready to turn it on for race two. He didn't want a repeat of that result, for sure.
No. And to finish our point scores, we had Salvadori coming in 11th, Ramos in 12th, De Rosa in 13th, 14th was Jordi Torres, followed by Russo, Zezek, Andreozzi, and then in 18th place, Anthony West.
Yep, and we had two retirees, Jake Gagne, the wild card replacement rider for the injured Stefan Bradl. As an American, always nice to see Jake over there, but unfortunately he had some gearbox issues and wasn't able to finish. Then we also saw Forres go out from the issue with Vandermark.
Yeah, I was tough to see, Forres drop. He did look like he was getting back through it, but dropped to 3 to 4 laps to go and stuff, and then Gagne to finish so close to the end with, I think he was only about 2 laps when he had to pull into the pits finally. And we should probably take a second and actually talk about the Gagne's filling ride, because Stefan Bradl, he was actually trying to be fit for the race, and then when they went through, he found out it just was not going to be possible. It did require surgery, and I think I did say in the news, but just in case we didn't cover it, but he's going to be out for the rest of the season. So, oh no, we did cover this in the news, but yeah, he's going to be, so Gagne may come back for the last few races or the last few rounds, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll see. I know, I believe Takahashi was coming back for an additional ride, and I don't know, who's going to get that seat, if Giuliano or Gagne will come back, and then if they're going to swap it out. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that. But it'd be nice to see Jake get another start this year.
Absolutely. So I think with that, we'll jump over to World Supersport.
So with World Supersport, we had a number of riders qualify in pretty good positions. The main rider who we were missing on the grid was Kenan Sofoglu, our championship leader.
Yeah, he had, I think FP3? Or no, it was a Super Pole when he went down. I think he had two crashes of the weekend, but Super Pole, he had the really nasty crash, ended up, I believe, fracturing his pelvis, I think, in 3 places.
Yeah, it was a nasty crash. There was only like a minute or so left of qualifying, so we saw that red flagged. It seemed like a pretty serious incident. Keenan's a tough cookie, so we don't see him sitting down for long unless it's absolutely necessary. So that was unfortunate to not see him on the grid. But yeah, so at the start of the race, we had the three Yamahas up front. We had Marias, Tuuli, and Caracasulo. Tuuli starting on pole position. It's really one of the first times we saw the Finnish rider, back to what we saw at the end of last year when he was battling Keenan.
Yeah, and this is his first pole position, which was definitely exciting to see. But I was glad to finally see he's gotten into form. He's got the new Yamaha, and maybe this one suits him a little better. But, last year we saw him put on a tear through about the last 3 or 4 rounds. So to see him kind of gain his confidence back, going forward, hopefully, he'll be able to keep his seat. He should be able to. I mean, especially after this weekend, it's good to see him back on form.
Yeah, I think so. And he's on the Callio Racing team, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think they're going to be happy with him. It's not the full factory effort, but I think again, once he got the new R6 this year, that really turned it around. So that was nice to see him up there. So again, at the start of the race, we had Marias, Tuuli, and Caracasulo. They all got a really great start. unfortunately, we didn't see Lucas Mias get a great start. He, you know, got bogged down in qualifying, and then was kind of down in the first couple laps, and then I believe it was the second lap, he got into a pretty big clash with another rider, which sent him even further down the field.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough to see because you're thinking like, okay, this is the race that he really needs to finish high if he wants to take as many points as he can off Keenan, because, you know, Keenan may or may not come back. Some people are saying he's done for the season. Some people are saying he might be back in Valencia. So if anything, this is the time when Mias needs to strike and get as many points as possible.
Yeah, and to see him all the way down, we know he's a fighter. So to see him, kind of have to battle through the grid. He was also riding injured, had a wrist injury. Don't remember exactly how he sustained that, but we got to see that around the middle of the race. Once things started to settle down, we saw PJ Jacobson and Mias really kind of trade fastest laps of the race. One lap it would be PJ, the next lap it would be Mias. So they both had the pace to go up there, and so to see Mias, you know, get bogged down on the line wasn't too good. About third way through the race, we saw Sheridan Marais lose his tires a bit. He was leading the race for a good long while. Unfortunately, it all kind of came in one lap, and he got passed by a number of riders.
Yeah, it was, you know, Sheridan, and the thing is, he was starting to make a comeback, but he's kind of had that kind of year, right, where everything looks like it's going his way, and then it kind of doesn't. But, you know, he had a strong end of the race, but dropping back like that definitely wasn't going to help for his chances towards the win.
Yeah, for sure. And from there, we kind of saw things hold steady a little bit. PJ was making a chase towards Thule and Caracasulo, and it seemed like PJ's tires just, he was saying after the race that he just didn't have the grip on the front or the rear, so he didn't have confidence to push. So, you know, the last couple of laps, it was really looking at the battle between Thule and Caracasulo. And then we were also keeping an eye on Mias. He was eventually able to make his way up all the way to fourth, and even then he started to close down on PJ, and we were wondering if he would be able to kind of close down the gap. But across the finish line, we had Thule in first, Caracasulo in second, and PJ in third, and again, like I was saying, Mias in fourth place with Cluzel rounding out the top five.
Yeah, and, you know, to see Nicky Thule get that win, it was a harder win. He raced Caracasulo all the way to the end. Caracasulo, who's having a strong back half of his season after struggling early on. PJ, he was there kind of just lurking in third. He was almost close enough to be there, but never quite in the fight for third. And you start to get a little worried when Mias finally did get up to fourth place after passing Cluzel, battling his fellow countrymen. But, you know, Mias had a hell of a ride. He definitely made some seriously ballsy passes trying to get by some of the riders in the back. But, you know, all kudos to him making his way back up to fourth, you know, slightly injured and definitely getting a huge disadvantage early in the race. That was quite impressive.
Yeah, and going back to your point on PJ, it's kind of how we've seen him all year on that NV. He's struggled. He's had some really bright spots, but some struggles with the bike, not only technically with some DNFs, but also just to get to grips to make the charge really up at the absolute top end of the field.
Yeah, obviously he's proven the bike is fast over one lap. I mean, he had, especially early in the year, he was getting pole positions left and right, not so much now, but I just feel like maybe with that bike they kind of lost their direction with it. I mean, his starts were terrible at the beginning of the year. He would get a pole, but then drop back to seventh place. Well, now it's kind of the other way. So I think maybe the bike setup's different, where now he's qualifying not as high, you know, still fourth, fifth, but he's not dropping back. He's still right there from the beginning. So he's towards the sharp end when the fight's going on, but just missing that something to be able to get up there and duke it out for the win week in and week out.
Yeah, exactly. So we saw, again, the podium with Thule, Caracasulo, and Jacobson. Mias, he ends up leading the championship, taking that fourth place, and he's leading by 9 points now. So that's a pretty good gap with two rounds to go.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt Keenan will be back, but at this point, Keenan would have to win the last two races just to make sure he had enough of a points advantage going into the final round to be able to take the championship, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I honestly, I doubt Keenan's going to be back as well, but you never know. I mean, we saw him in the early part of the season. He missed effectively the first three rounds due to the injury, and then he got taken out. And he's still battling for the championship. So never say never with Keenan. We've seen some other riders in the recent past come back from some injuries that we didn't think they'd be back from. So we'll see how if Keenan's able to get back on the grid.
Absolutely. So I think we'll go ahead and get on over to World Superbike Race 2. And so the start of this race was kind of nuts. You know, once again, we have the grid reshuffles, right? And the weather still was kind of hit and miss with the weather. Track was dry, but it was still chilly out. Very cold weekend in Magny-Cours. Especially our very own Harry Lloyd made that a point across when he was talking in the booth there. But you could tell this is a track where it's hard to pass, because normally Ray makes up from the ninth place. It seems like in the first two laps, he can get right out to the front. And neither of the top runners, not, you know, Davey, Sykes, any of these guys really couldn't get quite to the front right from the beginning. But then we had Eugene Lavery right in the middle pack. He comes out of one of the slower corners, high sides his bike, and much like the Vandermark crash into Chavy Forest, his bike goes spinning. Camry runs wide, misses the bike, but then unfortunately Johnny Ray does go by, clips the bike with his right foot peg, damages his bike a little bit, but more importantly, smashed up, I think, his toes a little bit, and Johnny pulled into the pits. He was trying to get back out, trying to put a second boot, and decided, you know what, I've already got this championship wrapped up. I kind of like the way I walk, and I like my feet, so maybe I'll just call it a day here.
Yeah, it was honestly pretty surprising to see Johnny go into the pits like that. You know, at first, you would think it was something mechanical with the bike, because it didn't really look like he got clipped, but you know, after, you know, a couple of minutes, they had a shot of him icing his foot, and he tried to change his boots, so maybe something got caught there. I believe they were saying something happened with the rear brake lever as well, so yeah, some difficulties, but yeah, I think Johnny was okay to end up sitting out the rest of the race. Obviously, he's a racer and wants to be out there, but I think with that championship wrapped up, it was a little bit easier for him to sit down for that.
So once we kind of get back to the, you know, full action after watching Johnny and the whole chaos there, Chaz Davey, he's out front pulling the lead, but then the white flags start coming out. Rain is hitting the surface, and now you're starting to wonder, okay, are we going to have like a lot of rain or just a little bit? And it turns out it wasn't a whole lot, but it was definitely enough to slow down some of the bikes. But then, you know, Camier was slicing his way through the field coming up, but then the technical gremlins of Envy Agusta struck again, and it was disheartening to see Camier, who is as high as second, have technical difficulties and his bike break down once again.
It was heartbreaking. Like we were saying with race one, you know, I want to see him on the podium. You want to see him on the podium. I think everyone wants to see him get the Envy on the podium, just to show with the work that he's put in with that team and with that bike. So just you saw him at the beginning of that lap when the bike broke down. He was just shaking his head to his team. We saw Lowe's catching him. And yeah, once he pulled off, it was that was tough to watch.
Yeah, so then the race kind of fell into a bit of a drone. We kind of had a little bit of follow the leader for most of this race. There wasn't too much going on after the early chaos. But, you know, the only thing really on track was that, you know, Lowe's and Vandermark, you know, they had a pretty good battle for a few laps. And eventually Vandermark was getting a few warning signs and decided to kind of reel it back and decide, you know what, let's go ahead and take the 2 and 3 instead of just taking one position on the box and having me go down.
Yeah, it was kind of everyone held their positions for a while. Lowe's and Vandermark, like you were saying, they scuffled a bit, but I think Vandermark understood, you know, he was at the limit with the bike. So, yeah, that's how we ended up with Chaz on, you know, coming home in first, Lowe's in second, and Vandermark in third. We had Xavi Forez in fourth, Melandri in fifth, Sykes in seventh after a really good race one. Then we had Torres, Ramos, and De Rosa rounding out the top 10.
Yeah, you know, what's impressive about Sykes, you can tell his injury was still holding him back. He did not look like his, you know, complete self out there. But then they were cutting down to the, you know, the celebrations, I think, during the first race when Johnny was down there, his family's down there. And Ray, I believe, was talking to Johnny's wife, and he was talking about his finger, because he wouldn't even take off his glove during the Parc Fermé until way late, and he was gesturing that his bone was sticking out across his other finger and his skin was completely broken on that fall. So just to kind of get the visual of how messed up his hand was in that crash, it was splinted in the glove, I believe, so he couldn't even really wrap his hand completely around the bar, and that's, you know, that's definitely going to slow you down. For, you know, these guys, you know, if he loses 0.3, that's enough to end up being in sixth place.
These racers, man, they're on another level. I couldn't even imagine. I didn't realize the injury was that bad, honestly. I knew Tom was saying that he was not expecting himself to be ready to ride in Magny Cours. So really, to take away a podium after two races is, you know, even a seventh place with that injury, nothing to shy away from.
Yep. And, you know, I don't remember the last time in World Superbike there was a podium without any Kawasaki's on it.
That's very true. Yeah, we had red and blue up there. That's it.
Yeah, they do. And good for Yamaha getting their, I think that's probably their first double. I'm pretty sure that's their first double podium that team has had since recent late. But, you know, kudos to them. But something I wanted to talk about, I know this feeling. This is the hard part of the season for a lot of riders and teams. It's getting towards the end now, especially that the champions wrapped up. There's a few spots people are duking it out, but for the most part, most are settled. But, you know, a lot of injuries. A lot of guys are, you know, have had injuries all year. They're still carrying them. A lot of guys need surgery. They're just kind of running around with pins in their legs and in their arms and shoulders. And, you know, their families are worn out. The travel budget's been worn out. They're sick of being on the road, the energy. So this is when it makes, you know, the job, I got to imagine, not nearly as fun as the rest of us certainly look at it to be.
Yeah, for sure. You know, pro athletes are rarely at 100%, and what would keep me, at least in a normal person on the couch, these guys don't even think that's a possibility. They're going out to ride, but, you know, after an entire season, 11 rounds of, you know, going all over the world, certainly takes their toll on anyone's body.
Yeah, and then not to mention, not like that, they're doing the easiest thing in the world. So, you know, basically, you know, like I said, the championship is wrapped up. Sykes and Davies still kind of have a battle going on, but because of Davies with that, getting that win in the second race, and, you know, Sykes carrying the injury and slipping back, that championship gap's coming up to be a little more to be overcoming. But, you know, he's gonna hold it down. He's still second place in the championship. Johnny Ray, you know, 456 points. He would probably have considerably more had he actually finished that race. But then Tom Sykes is second in championship on 336. That's a Kawasaki 1-2 in the championship right now, and it was enough to secure the Kawasaki KRT team championship. Manufacturer championship is still up for grabs, but this weekend they wrapped up the team championship with KRT Kawasaki bringing that home. And I think that's probably, I would bet they did that last year. I can't remember, but just goes to show you not only how strong Ray is on that, but how strong that team in general is.
Yeah, for sure. They have the budget, they have the personnel, so I think anything less than that for them at this point is unacceptable. So, yeah, no surprises there. And, I think that brings us to our World Supersport 300 race.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, so here we had a typical battle with a number of riders up front, from Schottmann, Perez, Garcia, De La Vega, you know, and Scott DeRue, all riders qualifying and trying to get up there for the championship lead. So really what it came down to was Garcia versus Coppola for the championship. So those are the two riders we were keeping our eye on. We had Muel on pole position. He was a French wild card. So race got going. Unfortunately, Muel went down, I believe, on the second lap. But really the bikes we were keeping our eyes on were the Hal Courier boys.
Yeah, with Coppola and Garcia, you know, not only are they 1-2 in the championship, they're 1-2 on track, or they were, you know, not necessarily 1-2 on track, but they were, you know, right next to each other, duking it out on track. So with their championships close, it really is winner take all.
Yeah, definitely. So we, as with most Supersport 300 races, it's really tough to report on a lot what's going on. We kind of fast forward to the last five laps. There's, you know, big group of riders, 7-8 riders. You know, we had Scott DeRue coming up towards the end of the race, and really Scott DeRue's had a tough year. He's you know, fallen back in a lot of races. So to see him fighting up front for this race was a nice change of pace for DeRue.
Yeah, no, he early on he was definitely the man out there, right, leading the championship. You saw that, you know, that green helmet out there taking it to him, but middle of the season kind of fell out for him, and just not quite as strong, but definitely picking up the pace here towards the end.
Yeah, so it was nice to see him back there. We saw really last couple laps with Garcia, Coppola, and Shotman. And Garcia got the bike, you know, really he was able to pull out a small gap with about a lap and a half to go. And, you know, it was holding steady with Garcia, Coppola, Shotman. On the last lap, we saw Garcia get the bike all sorts of sideways into turn 15. Ends up running a little bit wide, you know, we're seeing could Coppola come get him, but cross the line through the chicane, and we have Garcia, Coppola, Shotman, and Perez, and Danny Valley rounding at the top five for the Supersport 300 race.
Yeah, and I know that Garcia won. It was, you know, quite impressive because he was pulling away there a little bit at the end, but I have to say, after Coppola made his mistake and he slid back to a few positions, I think he probably had the most impressive race because he showed me one thing I did not know, is that you can back in a 300 Supersport bike. I didn't know that's possible, but he showed it on the brakes, and that was, man, that guy, you know, with that kind of skill, I wouldn't be surprised when he gets on a Supersport machine, he is going to be right towards the sharp end.
Yeah, it was like watching Sam Lowe's on a Moto 2 bike for the majority of that race. It was pretty impressive to see this tiny bike sideways. So, yeah, they were giving it their all. You know, so as we've seen throughout the year, it's a more and more respected championship, and a lot of eyes are there for a lot of rides coming up for these younger riders. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what's nice about the 300 class, it's had a good, strong first season. They'll be able to build on next season. It seems like the bikes, for the most part, have been quite evenly matched. They've done a really good job with that. But what's really good, I think, with this is that it's bleeding down into the other series. And Moto America is making the switch to make it basically reflect the same thing, using all the manufacturers and ditching the KTM-only class. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you see something like this kind of going to British Supersport to go along with their, I think it's a Motostar. And, you know, it's definitely a great entry level price-wise, technically-wise, because there's not a whole lot you can do to these bikes versus, like, if you wanted an all-Moto 3 class, those bikes have a ton of setup. So it keeps it simple, it keeps the budgets down, but it allows everybody to kind of get up there and be able to try and show, you know, if they even want to do a wild card, look at Noel, you know, wild cards, it gets the pole. You know, that's quite impressive considering there's definitely no factory effort with him.
Yeah, exactly. I think already before this year, we saw a few national championships have the Supersport 300 class or some variation there of it. So, yeah, to see how well this championship has taken off and see the eyes on it already, it's been fun to watch as a spectator. You know, you see lightweight racing with Moto 3 and how crazy it is, and you don't think it can really be replicated. And by the end of this year, these races are just on par with Moto 3, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, especially going towards this last race, they're not going to be going to Qatar. They're only going to be going to Valencia. So the next round is their last round, and honestly, it's the championship to watch. World Supersports wrapped up. If Keenan doesn't come back, then probably, you know, or so Superbike is wrapped up. Supersports probably going to be wrapped up. But we're going into the final race of the 300 Supersport with Mark Garcia on 126 points and Alfonso Coppola on 122, just 4 points back. So it really is winner take all, because no matter who finishes behind who, the winner is going to win the championship. And it's exciting to see. I mean, third through fourth, you know, they're back 96-91 with Perez and DeRue. But I really can't wait to see the showdown there in Valencia with these two riders.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting race. Can't wait for her at super, iconic track. So it'll be good to see the entire paddock there.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be exciting to see them duke it out. So that pretty much wraps it up for our weekend here in World Superbike. Unless you have anything else you wanted to kind of bring up, we'll probably get to closing out the show.
Yeah, that's about it. It was definitely an action-packed weekend, and yeah, we'll see you guys soon.
Yeah, so actually before we take off, just a couple updates. The MCN Fantasy League, I haven't had a chance to update that. Usually Andrew goes over that, so I'm sure he'll be jumping there, but I did talk to Andrew a little bit once we were getting off the phone in our talk earlier, and he was saying that our the current leader of the the Motopod Fantasy League, which is Jim O'Mahony, he's actually, I think, still sitting around about fourth or fifth overall. And so quite impressive there by Jim. And so I'm sure he'll be, you know, looking to have the MCN Fantasy League updated so he can get a little bragging rights there. But something else that got brought up today, if any of you follow Ben Spees on Instagram, he sure did make his way of teasing us. Now, he's been out riding his road bike quite a bit, which he's always done, but it seems like he's been at it a little bit more. He's been out riding a dirt bike and, you know, getting himself into shape for something, it would seem. And then today he posted a picture of his leather gloves and a helmet with the caption, "Let's see if I can still do this." So there's strong rumor that Ben is going to be actually headed back to the paddock, but he's going to be headed to the Moto America paddock to be riding either racing. He's going to be a racer slash team owner. He's going to fund his own team. And if he doesn't feel that he's good enough to go out there and race, that he'll probably have someone else up on the bike. So Moto America looks to be getting a little stronger. Maybe Ben Spees. And there's also rumor, I think, that John Hopkins might be coming back to Moto America next year. So for those of us that are big Moto America fans, that's definitely exciting news.
Yeah, two big names. You know, I saw that post from Spees yesterday, and yes, really, really exciting to tease. And then today we got a little bit more information as to what that may be. I think it's a really smart move from Spees. If you think about it, it's, you know, there's $1 million up for grabs and prize money in Moto America next year. It's a championship that's growing. It's another big name to bring towards it. You know, Spees is still going to see if that shoulder is going to give him any issues, but he's not on a world stage and he's not under the microscope. So there's the amount of pressure on him, it's going to be a lot less. Again, funding his own team and, you know, seeing if he can still go out there. So I'm really excited for that. It'd be nice to see John Hopkins as well back over here in the States. And, you know, that Superbike class is shaping up to be pretty competitive.
Yeah, I mean, and if we get a few more factories, because there was rumor that back when Spees was stepping down from MotoGP that he was going to be possibly jumping on a Ducati World Superbike before he just called it quits. It'd be really interesting if he still had some connections over there at Ducati and got Ducati back into Moto America, and then maybe Hopper can get Kawasaki back in. But I'm pretty sure that's just a wet dream of mine. But that would sure be great to get those manufacturers back in.
Yeah, it would. Be really nice to see Ducati there. I think that's not too far-fetched. I mean, it could be, but you know, we got the new V4 coming out next year. Hopkins has been riding that Ducati and BSB, so I don't know, we'll see. It'd be nice to see a couple manufacturers on the grid, but Ben Spees definitely gave us something to look forward to.
Maybe Spees and Hopkins on the same team on Ducatis. I don't know, that's a lot of talent right there. But we have a few upcoming races. There's gonna be the BSB round 12 from Brown's Hatch. That's going to be on the GP circuit there, of course, which is the much better circuit, not that Indy layout that is the fishbowl they race around on that no one seems to care about. But that's going to be going on in the weekend of October 13th through the 15th, and that is the triple header and final round, so make sure you tune in for that one if you have the opportunity to see it. MotoGP will be kicking off their round 15 from Japan that same weekend of October 13th through 15th. And the final, or one of the penultimate round for World Superbike round 12 will be in Valencia, October 20th through the 22nd. So we have a few races coming, but it's getting towards the end of the season and it's getting towards the sad, cold part of the year.
Yeah, it's we're wrapping up, and you know, try not to think about the little racing we have left, but we'll definitely be covering it here.
Yep. So don't forget, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. Send us your thoughts, send us your answers. I did get a bit of a fan email we're going to reply back to on the next show. It came in today, but I wanted to take a little in-depth at that. You can see us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/motopod. That is the Motopod fan page. Please like and or subscribe for updates. You can find us in other places as well. I am located on Twitter and Instagram at SkylarV28. Harry is at HLComs on Twitter, at HLPhotoGP on Instagram. Andrew, of course, is at Andy_course on Twitter. And Jim is on Twitter at MotoRGV. Where can people find you, Derek?
People can find me on Instagram at Derek_M_Cabrera. I'll definitely see if I can hop on Twitter for you guys as well and maybe shorten up my handle for you.
All right. Well, this will be a bit of a mixed mash show. Like we said, we had all kinds of hosts. So once again, thank you to Andrew Kors for joining me earlier in the show. Thank you to Derek for joining me to wrap up the World Superbike. I'm Skyler Vic Roy, and we'll catch you on the next episode.